As I mentioned earlier, we interviewed Cathy Archibald from the Safer Medicines campaign on the subject of animal experimentation and its relevance to humans. Now, to put this in perspective, it's worth noting that in Australia each year about 7 million animals are used in experiments, and globally approximately 300 million. It's difficult to get exact figures, as in many countries the figures are not recorded, and there's little independent evaluation even in those countries where the figures are recorded. But under any circumstance, an enormous number of animals are used, so we would have to wonder why, considering so many animals are used, and many of them in so-called medical research, the purpose of which is to cure human diseases, why diseases aren't being cured and generally tend to increase. From my Googling, humans now have 30,000 diseases. You would think with that many diseases to choose from, and with about 60 million animals a year being killed just in medical research, they should be able to cure one. If people are wondering why we're not finding cures, then perhaps Ms. Archibald can shed some light. What is the Safer Medicines campaign and who contributes to it?
We're a patient safety organisation of doctors and scientists who believe that medical research should focus more on human biology and less on animal models as surrogate humans. We are not for profit. We're funded by public donations, and our educational wing is a registered charity.
And what is your background, Catherine?
I studied genetics at university, and then I went to work in the pharmaceutical industry. I was working on designing drugs for heart attack patients, and it was very frustrating working in our lab where we would design drugs specifically for humans, and we'd get what looked like a really promising drug, and it would go off down the corridor to the animal labs and never come out the other side. This was the fate of most drugs, because there would be some side effect in rats or mice or dogs, and that would kill the compound. And yet, had the compound gone on to be tested in humans, those side effects may well have not occurred. And the National Cancer Institute in America admits that we've probably lost cures for cancer because they were ineffective in animals. And one really good example of that is Gleevec. Gleevec is one of the best cancer treatments that we have. It's a cure for chronic myeloid leukemia. And it was discovered and developed in human blood. And then it went on to be tested in dogs, because that's a legal requirement. And it was very poisonous to dog livers. And so it was binned. Unfortunately, one of the guys who'd been working on the human blood before the dog trials rescued it from the bin, had a queue of leukemia patients very anxious to try it, and it's now, as I say, one of the best cancer treatments that we have.
One would have to wonder how many we've missed out on. As you said, I remember seeing a quote from Dr. David Korn, who was a former director of the US National Cancer Institute, saying they'd tested about 40,000 substances for potential anti-cancer activity in mice, and those that were effective in mice, none of those had gone on to benefit humans. And thankfully, after 25 years, they'd stopped using mice and are now using, I think, human cells.
That's so, right. Yes. It's futile. I mean, it's a real obstacle. We'll never know how many good treatments we've lost,
Or how much money was wasted over the 25
Absolutely,
years.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now you mentioned that you had an illness once called insulinoma. Can you tell us what that is, and if animal experimentation was relevant to the treatment you received for it?
Yes, I developed a tumour in my pancreas, in the islet cells in the pancreas, which produce insulin, so it was called an insulinoma. And it's a really rare thing. I diagnosed myself, and I got rather worried when I was initially researching, trying to find out what it was, because most of the research seemed to come from ferrets, and I was hoping that I could have surgery to remove the tumour, but looking at all the ferret work, it said that was pointless, because the disease was invariably fatal. And so wasn't very encouraging. Very pleased to say that's not the case in humans, and I had successful surgery, and I'm still here. But when I was in hospital, it was incredible. There was a kind of global statement from all the world's leading diabetes researchers, because I'm sure you know the islet cells in the pancreas that produce insulin. Well, obviously, it's very relevant to diabetes. And they issued this joint statement that they've made an enormous discovery that the architecture of the islet cells in humans is completely different from rodents, from rats and mice, which they'd spent the last 30 years studying for diabetes research. And they basically summarised that all of that study had been futile. And from now on, we need to study human pancreatic tissue rather than rodent pancreatic tissue. And, you know, I wish they had realised that 30 years ago.
And I've read that you know, it is widely believed by people who are on insulin who have diabetes that animal experimentation was responsible for saving them. But I've also seen information indicating that that is actually not correct, and that the animal experiments actually threw researchers off for quite a while and led them to believe, I think, that it was a liver rather than a pancreatic disease. Is that correct?
That's right, yes. I mean, it is a mixed picture. I mean, in the early days, in the 18th century, doctors realised that diabetes was a disease of the pancreas, and they found this from doing human autopsy. And then when they did animal experimentation, they came to believe that it was actually a liver disease. And so, research was thrown off track for decades.
Yes. Now, the foreign nature, I think A.L. Notkins, I remember being quoted saying the foreign nature of animal insulin may be the reason for some of the side effects, unwanted side effects of the...
Absolutely. Absolutely. Bizarrely, there's a tiny number of people that tolerate animal insulin better than human insulin, but for most people it's much, much better to have human insulin, obviously.
And were some of these experiences in your own life the reason you became involved in the Safer Medicines campaign?
Yes, and absolutely. And I found it so enormously frustrating that I'd seen from my own experience the futility and the irrelevance of much animal experimentation. And yet the establishment position of the government and the media and the establishment, the scientific establishment particularly, is that animal experimentation is indispensable and, you know, ridiculous scare stories like we'd all be dead without it, and absolute nonsense. And I found it completely frustrating that so much misinformation is the norm, and that the public is being brainwashed with really the opposite of the truth. And in fact, medicine would progress so much faster if we would focus on humans, which we can now do. In the past, studying animals became the norm because it was difficult to study humans and we didn't have all the tools of molecular biology that we do now have. But now we really should be focusing on the animal of interest, which is humans, and focusing on animals leads us up the wrong path again and again.
Australians love their digital equipment, and that's all fine and good because it increases our quality of life, but we need to think more carefully about what we're doing when we're finished with it. E-waste is growing at 3 times the rate of other municipal waste.
3CR Community Radio is dedicated to exploring the issues that affect our future.
Because I think it is something we just need to be talking about.
855 AM. Tune in and listen up.
Okay, there we had Cathy from the Safer Medicines campaign telling us about her own personal experiences and about the failure of animals to identify suitable medicines for humans. Here's a quote which is quite relevant to that. This is from Dr. Richard Klausner, who was at the time the director of the National Cancer Institute in the United States, which is the largest cancer research institute in the world. Quoted in the LA Times on May 6, 1998, he said, "The history of cancer research has been a history of curing cancer in the mouse. We have cured mice of cancer for decades, and it simply didn't work in humans." And the former director of the largest private cancer institute in the world, Dr. Erwin Broese, who was the director of the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, and former director of biostatistics at Roswell Park Memorial Institute for Cancer Research, Buffalo, New York, said, "The uselessness of most of the animal model studies is less well known. Indeed, while conflicting animal results have often delayed and hampered advances in the war on cancer, they have never produced a single substantial advance either in the prevention or treatment of human cancer." End quote. The US National Cancer Institute treated mice growing 48 different human, in inverted commas, cancers with a dozen different drugs proven successful in humans. And in 30 of the cases, the drugs were useless in mice. Almost two-thirds of the mouse models were wrong. The US National Cancer Institute also undertook a 35-year screening program. As I mentioned earlier, it was actually testing 400,000 plant species and animals for anti-tumour activity. Out of the outrageously expensive research, many positive results surfaced in animal models, but not a single benefit emerged for humans. As a result, the National Cancer Institute now uses human cancer cells for cytotoxic screening. And that quote is taken from the Handbook of Laboratory Animal Science, Volume 2, Animal Models, Spencer and Howe, page 1994, page 4. So it's good that the Handbook of Laboratory Animal Science actually tells people that animal experiments don't work. Unfortunately, it still goes on to tell them how to do animal experiments. Now we'll go to part 2 of the interview with Kathy. What if people were to say, though, that surely monkeys who have 99% DNA in common with humans must be very good models for human disease?
Well, you would think so, wouldn't you? But actually, it doesn't work out that way in practice. For example, chimpanzees are our closest living relatives with more than 95% of their DNA in common with us. But yet, they don't suffer from AIDS or malaria or cancer or heart disease, all of which kill millions of humans every year. So they're actually a very poor model of most human diseases. A very good example of how different monkeys are from us is the Northwick Park clinical trial disaster, which happened in London 5 years ago, where 6 healthy young men were given an experimental drug to try. And they were reassured it was safe because it had been tested in monkeys at huge doses. It was tested in cynomolgus macaques, which were theoretically identical, or they should respond identically to humans because the receptor for this particular new drug looked identical. And they'd been given, the monkeys had been given doses 500 times higher than the volunteers were given. And yet all 6 of the clinical trial volunteers were rushed into intensive care and very nearly died because the monkeys obviously did not predict what would happen in humans. They created a very false sense of security. And it clearly were not a good model at all.
And I think the Vioxx, which we've got a lot of publicity here, and killed about 140,000 people with heart attacks, actually increases the heart protection in primates.
Absolutely. I mean, Vioxx was tested very extensively in a huge variety of animal species, and in nearly all of them it looked cardioprotective. So Merck, the manufacturer, were actually thinking about marketing Vioxx as a heart drug. Which is so ironic because, as you say, it's the mechanism of why it killed so many people was through heart attack and stroke. And yet it did entirely the opposite thing in most animal species.
And would you say that other species are, I presume, even poorer models for human disease than monkeys?
Yes, I mean, there seems to be no rhyme or reason to which species are more or less like humans in particular respects. Evolutionary closeness doesn't appear to come into it. Some species will react like humans to some drugs and not others. But the unavoidable truth is that it's impossible to know in advance which species will be a good match. You can never know until you know how humans are going to respond, by which time, of course, it's too late.
But aren't we led to believe, though, that the animal tests are done to protect humans so that humans won't have to have these things tried on them?
Yes, I mean, that's the rationale, but that's why Safer Medicines Campaign exists, to confront that rationale, which is entirely illogical, because animals cannot predict drug safety for humans. And so here we have our major tool for assessing drug safety, and it simply doesn't work.
But what about genetically altered animals, or animals that are bred to have, you know, certain diseases that humans have?
Yeah, they've been GM animals, genetically modified animals, have been hailed as the solution to the problem of human relevance. And researchers really believe that by inserting a human gene or two into a mouse, they can effectively make a man out of a mouse. But this is far too simplistic a view, and it simply doesn't work out. For example, the cystic fibrosis mouse, which has the human gene for cystic fibrosis, suffers from bowel problems rather than the lung problems that kill human patients. The mouse is still a mouse, even with its added human gene, and it regulates that gene in a mouse way, not in a human way. You can't discount the background. You can't take a gene out of one animal and stick it in another animal and think it's going to behave. You know, the host matters, and the whole premise of GM animals disregards that.
Won't it be necessary to test substances and try new procedures directly on humans if we don't do animal experiments?
No, and that's what we're trying to achieve, is to protect humans much better than they're currently protected by animal testing, which is not well at all, as we've said. At the moment, volunteers in phase one clinical trials are being used as guinea pigs to find out if new drugs are safe. And we think this is outrageous, because technologies are now available to test the safety of medicines in a human context before there's any need to expose volunteers or patients to unknown risks. Yet governments, every government in the world, still insists on proof of safety in animals instead of mandating the use of these sophisticated new technologies like microdosing, for example, which would actually give us human information. Microdosing is a real breakthrough in drug testing. It's where you give a tiny nanogram dose of an experimental drug to volunteers, and then you monitor them with incredibly sophisticated scanners that can, you know, count individual atoms, and you can watch the progress of the drug through the living human body. You can see where it's metabolized, and this gives you information that you can never get from animals. And on the basis of this good information, you can design your phase one clinical trials in a much better way.
Yes, and it's worth noting that the US FDA, in a 2004 publication called Innovation or Stagnation, Challenge and Opportunity on the Path to New Medical Discovery, said, quote, 92% of new drugs fail clinical trial, that is, trial in humans, after they've passed all the safety tests in animals. I think this quote from Dr. James D. Gallagher of Lederle Laboratories concisely summarises the real reason for drug testing in animals, and that was, animal tests are done for legal reasons and not for scientific reasons. The predictive value of such studies for man is meaningless.
Australians love their digital equipment, and that's all fine and good because it increases our quality of life, but we need to think more carefully about what we're doing when we're finished with it. E-waste is growing at three times the rate of other municipal waste.
3CR Community Radio is dedicated to exploring the issues that affect our future.
Because I think it is something we just need to be talking about.
855 AM. Tune in and listen up.
Well, then, if animal experiments are so inaccurate, why do they continue?
Good question. Lots of reasons. One reason is that it's much quicker and easier to study animals and to publish research papers. It's much easier to study animals than humans because humans just won't stay still in the cage and eat what they're told. You know, there's all these variables that you can't control like you can with animals in a convenient cage. And that's a real factor. And of course, lifespan is a real factor. It's, you know, you can get through generations of mice quite quickly. You have to be very patient when you're studying humans. But I think the main reason is tradition, because scientists have been brought up to believe that animal testing is indispensable, and old habits really do die hard. It's very encouraging that the American National Academy of Sciences published a report in 2007 called Toxicity Testing in the 21st Century. And this report called for animal testing for environmental toxicity to be replaced with more efficient and effective technologies based on human tissues and computer models. There's no question this is the way of the future. And we need to move this way much faster.
What can members of the public do to contribute less to animal experiments and bring about their abolition?
You have to separate, I think, animal testing for things like cosmetics and household products, and that's easy. You just need to make sure that you buy non-animal tested products, and also write to the companies who still do animal testing and tell them why you're boycotting their products. But as far as animal testing for medicines go, obviously you can't boycott them if you need them. And you can't choose non-animal tested medicines because all medicines are animal tested. But what you can do is write to your government representatives and write to the pharmaceutical companies and, very importantly, to your local and national media, and point out that animal testing has been superseded by superior methods which are based on human biology, and that it would be in everyone's best interests to modernise safety testing. It's really a win-win-win situation, and it's not just animals that will benefit. Patients will benefit, pharmaceutical companies will benefit, national health systems will benefit. Not only will it save huge amounts of time, but it will save huge amounts of money and large numbers of patients' lives, and of course large numbers of animals' lives. One other thing that you could do, which could be very, very effective, is become a shareholder in a pharmaceutical company or two. Buy one share is all you need to do, and that allows you to go along to the annual general meeting, and you can stand up and start talking about the need to switch to superior new human-based technologies.